Hello everyone, welcome to the International Business Podcast. If you work across time zones, borders and cultures, this is the show for you. I'm Leonardo, founder and host of the show, but let's make it simple and just call me Leo. I'm based in Shanghai and I'm accompanied by two co-hosts, Stefano, based in Paris, and Audrey from San Francisco. Coming up on today's episode.
Product owners, manufacturers are all shifting gears, right? They're shifting gears and they're saying, okay, we still have our distributors, we still have our dealers, but how do we move into a direct-to-consumer strategy? How do we get our products closer to our customers? But there's this fear in these guys, right? They're the fear of, you know, I've been running Excel pen and paper for the last 30 years, and today you're telling me to install a software. So in their mindset, their mentality is like, you're asking me to install a software in my, say, warehouse. Now, what is going to happen, right? What's the implication of putting a technology in the supply chain, or, you know, in my space?
Meet Bernard, CEO of Athio. His mission is to help local Southeast Asian SMEs digitize. With a deep understanding of supply chain best practice, Bernard and his team help clients make change happen and deliver significant operational improvements. You can find more details about the guests in the show notes. Now, let's dive into today's episode. Hi, Bernard. I'm glad to have you on. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for having me on the show. I hope all is well there.
Everything is amazing, but I think it'll get even better after you answer to the very first question. Why would you define yourself, Bernard, as an international professional?
Great question, especially at this point in time, Leo. You know, 20 months, no flights, no accumulated flying hours. And this whole question has been redefined, man. You know, but looking back pre-COVID, pre-lockdown, and it's a really good question for me to reflect as well. You know, I started out, of course, in Malaysia, and then I had my opportunity in Singapore. And I remember it was that point in time, that one pivotal moment for us, where I remember my partner and I just told ourselves we were having a little bit of trouble with talents, with software engineers. And we actually just packed our bags, you know, we packed our bags and we booked the next flight out to Vietnam, to Saigon in Ho Chi Minh City, right? And we didn't even know who to meet, where to go. I remember in the airport, and we were Googling mobile development companies in Vietnam, right? And Google search results shows us something. I remember the first key result was, these are the top 10 mobile development house in Saigon you must know. So we click on that and have it conveyed. I remember we contacted some of the guys there. Long story short, we end up building a great relationship with those guys, with my partners. We eventually acquired these guys, and you know, we came back with a partnership with a Vietnam company, right? And we managed to get our problem solved. And one thing lead to another, and then next thing you know, we're down in downtown Bangkok, and all that. So I guess where it all started was these opportunities that brought me across the different exciting markets in Southeast Asia, right? And I'll be honest with you, when I was young that time, I didn't see Southeast Asia as one, right? It's like 9 different or 10 different countries, you know? But as I travel, and I learn and I look at cultures and all that, you know, you know, it's amazing, you know, that you can look at Southeast Asian, or they call it ASEAN, as one, yet it is so different and diverse. Country to country, market to market, right? And as entrepreneurs, you know, I guess the first thing always is, you know, going into a market and to seek for new partnerships, right? And that's what in the business terms, that's what they use, partnerships. But the way we looked at it is we go in, and what I learned over the years is to seek a relationship, right? And that's how it went, right? So you know, when I finally got into the opportunity of, you know, the supply chain and logistics technology with my Korean partners. So I was in South Korea, right? And I was, we had a small project there. One thing led to another. And I was circling around the startup events, you know, business events in Seoul. And next next thing I know, I got a new tech, right? And I was kind of like being known as the Southeast Asian dude, you know? So there were Korean businesses who wanted to stick to the Southeast Asian region as a market footprint. And they were referring, to Bernard as the Southeast Asian guy. So I was like, this is pretty cool, you know? And I was kind of like, you know, I immediately jumped into the role and I'm like, hey, you know, you want to know about Vietnam, you want to know about Saigon, I can tell about Saigon, you know, about Singapore or Malaysia, where my home country is.
And you mentioned Southeast Asia. So right now, Bernard, you're managing teams across Southeast Asia. And these teams are made of software engineers, project managers, and designers. How to lead and grow a multicultural team?
It was tough. I have to admit, in the beginning, it was tough. Why tough? It's because, you know, we always start with, like, you know, the one size fits all, right? It's like, or one style fits all, you know? But I learned very quickly that even though we are all in the same region called Southeast Asia, however, being able to understand, being able to empathize, and I think this the three key things here is this, right? One is empathy. Two is culture. Three, and I guess one thing that I've really have come to really learn very in a very important manner is a shared core values, right? You've got to find that shared core values, you know? So number one is empathy. The things that I've learned traveling and moving from one Southeast Asian country to the other across our offices is that you've got to listen, right? As a leader, you've got to listen. You've got to open your ears. You've got to open your eyes. You know, you've got to observe how people work. You've got to understand. You've got to talk to these guys. And it's not only about, hey, build this web, you know, or build this app. It's not about that, right? It's really about understanding and listening to what they have to say. Culture is really all about being respectful. When you're in Asia, you got to like kind of learn how to tone down a little bit, you know. You got to like learn how to like, okay, you know, being very respectful, you know. I remember when I was in Korea and I was my very early days, you know, when we were setting up in South Korea, and I went to the extent of learning how to drink a soju. Now, drinking a soju is not about just getting drunk, and it is so important that you do it right before the other guy would start talking business with you, right? The idea of the effort of learning it right and the effort you put in to make sure you get it right, you know, like, for example, you know, if you're drinking with a more elderly guy right in front of you, and when you're drinking the soju, you got to turn to one side, right? And not drink directly in the front, you know, it's not as easy as that. So, but it's not just about showing that you know the culture, but the effort, you know, you got to put the effort in to say, hey, I'm learning this not because I want to impress you. I'm learning this because I respect you, right? So that's where it is, right? And then of course, you know, when you have, you know, multicultural team, I actually like this because, you know, there's always this thing, the typical word is multinationals, right? But I always like to use this across my teams as well. I say we're not multinational, we're multicultural, right? And to basically bring everybody together in a multicultural environment is really about shared core values. We've had guys who come and go, who join us and stayed and became the core team, right? The A team. The one thing that we observe and I realized is that all of us share a very common core values that we truly value, right? So I think that's where these three stuff are very important: empathy, culture, and shared core values.
Yes, to connect with what you just said, Bernard, about 1 year and a half ago when I started working in the Asia Pacific mm-hmm. region, I realized after maybe 6-7 months later that I had to tone down because I come from, I would say, a more American, let's say, style of management mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. being direct and aggressive,
yeah,
it doesn't work well most of the times. And I realized, yeah, a good 6 months after I started my new role. So absolutely right. Your mission across Southeast Asia is to help local small and medium enterprises digitize. Could you walk us through this journey, Bernard?
So our business in Korea, where we started back in 2012, was about supply chain and logistics, right? So we're very much focused in the middle mile, where the warehousing is. We were doing a lot of warehouse controls, warehouse execution systems, and you're talking about automation, robotics, Internet of Things, and stuff like that. What happened was when the leadership decided to seek a new and expand our market footprint to Southeast Asia, that's where somewhere late 2018, the whole idea was really to just bring to basically bring all this cool and sexy stuff of automation and robotics to Southeast Asia. But four or five months of market study, you know, we traveled Southeast Asia and talking to a lot of ground guys, the local SMEs, and we realized that the market wasn't ready for this, right? It's not so much of an affordability issue, but the market wasn't ready to go to that level of adoption of automation. But at the same time, I remembered going back to the drawing board together with my team, and I said, hey, look, while this doesn't work right now, what we saw was a big opportunity in a very huge addressable market among the local SMEs to basically empower them to get to the point of digitization. So there's still a lot of manual work. There's still a lot of Excel spreadsheets, you know, pen and paper, right? So a lot of human labor and manual decisions. So what we wanted to do really was we saw the opportunity. We knew it was a huge addressable market within the local SMEs. Hence, it was very clear to us, and our mandate was a very simple mandate. And we told ourselves all we wanted to do in the Southeast Asia region was to help local SMEs digitize.
You mentioned empathy before. Why are empathy and stories critical to engaging with supply chain buyers?
If we look at this from the Southeast Asian context, a couple of things that I've learned since the time we started expanding our market footprint into this region, and we really spent a lot of time. You know, Leo, you wouldn't have imagined the amount of and it's not about dishing out surveys, you know, survey forms and all that, right? It's really us going down, having a meal, you know, local meals, having a drink at a bar with those guys, with the local guys, local businesses, and really learning why the slow pace, why the slow pace of adopting digital in their space, in this Southeast Asian region, right? And what we've learned is, you know, just for example, the three key examples that we learned really is, and they're all interrelated to each other, right, is number one, we kind of learned that these local SMEs, they're not well informed, right? They don't make well informed decisions because of this lack of knowledge, right? Because of this lack of knowledge, they are typically then number two, they are typically then driven by fear. So they're very much fear driven. Like it's like when we speak to these guys, when we have conversations with these guys, it's so clear and so obvious that they know that. The time has come that they need to digitize, right? The time has come, you know, they have reached that point, right? Manual work, well, it have worked for the last 30 years, but it's not going to cut it anymore now. But there's this fear in these guys, right? They're the fear of, you know, I've been running Excel pen and paper for the last 30 years, and today you're telling me to install a software. So in their mindset, in their mentality, is like you're asking me to install a software in my, say, warehouse. Now, what is going to happen, right? What's the implication of putting a technology in the supply chain, or you know, in my space, right? So they became very fear driven. Hence the number three factor here is in a bigger picture, if you look at it from a more macro perspective, it's a very limiting mindset. The way it has been done has always been, okay, these are the gaps. So they look at historical data and they look at where the gaps are, and then they will just invest on technology, you know, to the minimal just to plug the gaps. It's on a very limiting mindset, and they're not empowering mindset. They're not forward looking. So the whole idea was when we saw these three, you know, for example, these three key factors, right? The question really was, we asked ourselves really was, you know, how do you change this, right? How do you create an impact around this right now, right? On a segment of a community of people that is, number one, their lack of knowledge, not well informed, they're fear driven, and their mindset is very limiting, right? So how do you change this? The answer is really you can't change this. But what you can do is you can start to empathize with this characteristics, right? You can start to listen. And one of the things that worked really well, and we kind of thought that, you know, we learned along the way that why it worked well was because all this while, it's not about giving them more information only. It's not about just, you know, pumping information to these guys and, you know, giving it to them. But it's also about listening to what they know and what they do not know. You know, it's like the thing about knowing what you know and you know, I do not know what I do not know, you know, that kind of thing. So it was a lot of listening to these guys, a lot of talking to them, a lot of understanding. In fact, to the extent we were drawing up, we were always on a drawing board with these guys, you know, and drawing up their S's. Okay, this is your S's supply chain, right? And what could be a 2B? Oh, so we show them like, okay, you know, and is this where you want to be? Or is there something else? So I guess being able to empathize, right, and understand their stories is more important than trying to just tell our stories to this guy in engaging with these supply chain and logistics players in Southeast Asia.
This episode is sponsored by International Expansion Explained. Are you looking to expand internationally, but you're not sure where to start? Or you export already, but would like to venture further overseas? Reach out to arrange an international clarity session and learn more about growth plans at katherinereed.com. That is katherinereed.com. And what are the important factors to consider in choosing digital supply chain and warehousing solutions for SMEs?
Number one, flexibility. Number two, speed. And number three, to be able not to be cheap. Don't be the cheap guy, but be affordable. A lot of times, these local SMEs, you know, in this digital supply chain and warehousing solutions, you know, in this space, is all about, they've been bogged down with very rigid technologies, very rigid solutions. Just to give you an example, you know, so say you buy your warehouse management software, right? So you invest in a warehouse management software. And then over time, as the market grows, as you have more clients, and just say at one fine day, or one of your clients say, hey, I would like to do some integration with my Oracle, my ERP system, right? One of my ERP system. So now this local SME guy need to do the integration, right? Now, this is where it gets all rigid. And that's where their nightmare starts, right? Because additional integration means more cost. And these are things that they don't understand, right? What do you mean by API integration? You know, so the idea is basically to consider the flexibility, right, in whatever solutions or technology that you are looking at for supply chain and logistics, right? So number one is flexibility. Number two is speed. The idea of speed is really to help increase speed of operations, right, and accuracy. Although the contradiction is always, you know, if you want speed, then you got to control, you got to compromise on accuracy, right? But what I mean by speed here really is the speed to deploy, right? It can't be, you know, I sign up for a technology or sign up for a solution and we can only fully deploy and go live in the next 6 months. And I think that is a lot of there's a lot of lost opportunity in that sense, right? So speed to deploy is very important. It's got to be in weeks and not months, you know. And then of course, lastly, to my point is that, you know, one thing I really learned in Southeast Asia for the local SMEs is don't sell them cheap, but you've got to have the heart to really being able to make it affordable, right? So let me just share a few story of how we really how we did in Hatyo, right? Is in this, especially this affordable part, right? Is because, as you know, South Korea is one of the very few advanced nation in Asia, right? And being an advanced nation, everything is expensive, right? Our engineers are expensive, so building a software and trying to sell it as a SaaS model would be expensive as well, right? So, but one of the things that we saw when we did our market expansion into Southeast Asia, was that how can we bring a product that we have basically built out in an advanced nation like South Korea, right? And it's going to be expensive, but how can we bring? So for example, if you look at it metaphorically, we're basically building a BMW i8, right, down in Korea. Now, how do we bring this BMW i8 from Korea in an advanced nation to Southeast Asia's market and sell it at a Toyota price? So we got to make it affordable. We don't sell cheap, right? And to give them the maximum value. Don't go for the cheap stuff. You know, look for something that is affordable. You know, and affordability, of course, is to many people is to many different businesses is on a different level. But go for something that's affordable, but that you can get the maximum value out of it. Right. So three key things: flexibility, speed, and affordability.
I like simple definitions, Bernard. In one or two sentences maximum, how would you define ERP?
Big dinosaur and very legacy. They're going to hate me for this. Half of the world is going to agree and half of the world is going to hate me for this. But yeah.
Looking the 5 years in the future, Bernard, what trends do you see happening in the supply chains stretching across Southeast Asia?
I think COVID, the last 20 months, has really upended global supply chains, you know, and I've seen with my own eyes, with my own experience, dealing with supply chains and logistics players across Southeast Asia. I guess different people will have different point of views, but I'm just going to try to keep this very simple into three very basic trends, which I would say, you know, we might not need to wait for 5 years. It's actually already, we're starting to see small ripples happening. And I guess over the next 3 to 5 years, yeah, we will see a lot of very active happening in these three key areas. Number one is there's going to be a rapid investments in the technology. 20 months ago, March 2020, right, when Malaysia went into a lockdown because of COVID-19, for a while, we thought that we're gonna go out of business, right? Because we are the generations that's never experienced lockdown. What is a lockdown, right? So when they tell you just gotta stay at home, you can't go to your office, you can't be at a client's place. So how do you do sales? How do you do all those things, right? But you know, the last 20 months taught me that it's different, right? And because logistics and supply chain is one key industry that continues to move. When the world locks down, it used to be we have to go and, you know, search for leads and go after the clients. But the last 20 months, people are coming to us, right? And we can see that these supply chain and logistics players in the market right now, they are no more looking at technology as, oh, you know, we got to spend and buy and spend on a software. It's they're moving away from that mindset and say, okay, what is a good investment? What sort of technology do I need to future-proof my supply chain, right? How do I connect my e-commerce marketplaces better, right? And how do I sell cross-border, right? So the second thing is really cross-border. So first thing is rapid investments in technology. Now, second thing is cross-border. In Southeast Asia, you can see that, you know, for example, cross-border selling, right? So for example, a e-commerce retailer in Malaysia, right, who has been doing really, really well, right, in the Malaysian market. Today, they have this plan during the pandemic, right? And today they're looking at it and saying, oh, well, how do I now sell to Thailand, right? To the Thailand market. How do I sell to the Singapore market, right? Who is going to run my warehousing there? How do I get logistics sorted out? And how do I plug into the Lazada and Shopee in the Thailand market and the Singapore market? Cross-border selling is actively picking up right now. And we're not talking only about big e-commerce retailers. We're also starting to see the smaller to mid-sized guys moving into this as well. And, you know, because it's all about the opportunity to expand their market share. And last, the third one is direct to consumers. So the guys that we work with are a lot of, you know, third-party logistics providers, retailers, e-commerce retailers and distributors. A specific segment that has really have also opened up and begin that we're starting to talk to quite significantly as well are the manufacturers, the main distributors of the product owners, the brand owners, right? And what they're looking at, which is point number three, is direct to consumers. They're looking at it and say, okay, retail has, you know, we have been in the retail lockdown over the last 20 months. You know, one time is locked down and the other time is like the retail malls are open again. But even now when the malls are open, because people are more wary. So the footfall is not as high as before. So over the months, product owners, manufacturers are all shifting gears, right? They're shifting gears and they're saying, okay, we still have our distributors, we still have our dealers, but how do we move into a direct to consumer strategy? How do we get our products closer to our customers? how do we leverage on the e-commerce marketplaces? How do we not oversell? And all these things starts to come in place. So three things, right? Rapid investment in technology, cross-border selling, and shifting gears to direct to consumers.
What was your number one lesson learned during the pandemic?
When the going gets tough, the tough gets going, right? I mentioned earlier to you, Leo, that March 2020, last year, when we all went into lockdown for the first time in our life, we thought we were going to go out of business. But of course, we didn't have time to worry, you know, knowing entrepreneurs, right? We didn't have time to worry. We spent 2 months pivoting out of, you know, mindsets, not only pivoting out of business models, we're pivoting out of mindsets. We digitalize every single touch points that we have with our clients and our leads in the market. And I guess the number one lesson that I learned really is you've got to, you know, in tough times, you don't allow the tough times to define you, but you got to take control of the situation. And really, the key thing here is to identify the winners and double down. You know, many businesses are closing down. Yes, you know, it can't be avoided, right? In a pandemic, you know, when there's no more sales, many businesses, we do see many businesses going down and stuff like that. But if you have the opportunity and you are able to look and observe the market trends and being able to identify the winners and then take that risk, double down. And that's what we did. We identified the winners within the business model, within the market, and we doubled down over the last 12 months. We doubled down, yeah.
Bernard, I got one final question I ask everyone who comes on the show. Please tell us one memorable moment from your international career, and you can pick between a successful, a funny, or even a catastrophic episode.
One very, you know, memorable moment from this is really when I have to part ways with I have to break a relationship. I have to part ways, you know, and I'm just going to get really real on this, right? When you think that things are working well, you know, you've got a market figured, you've got all the partnerships, and then because of personal reasons, and you've got a pathways, and you know, it's not only about a business relationship, but it's about a friendship, right? About a friendship that you've built over the years, you know, over time, right? So I've got this one very key moment, and it's become a very key moment in how I've also have shaped this moment has shaped the way I've managed and the way I've approached every single time I built cross border relationships or different markets, you know, expansion. And I always tell myself this, right? When the business fails, so sometimes partnerships is not 100% foolproof, right? So it might, business might fail, might not happen. And when the business fail, the friendship must not fail, right? So I've had a moment where it comes to a point where I had to let go of the friendship as well. And it was bad, right? It was bad. I didn't want that to happen that way. But then it was a real important pivotal moment in my business life. And it really helped me define that, you know, businesses can fail, but the friendship must stay.
Bernard, before we go, after listening to this episode, who should connect with you? And tell us a little bit more about your current role.
I work with a lot of retail and distribution players. The e-commerce retail market is a fast-growing market for us right now, right? So retailers, e-commerce retailers and distribution in the supply chain and logistics space, who wants to enable their Southeast Asian market, right? So we do work with European brands, we do work with American brands, Australian brands, who wants to penetrate and enable their Southeast Asian market, right? I'd love to reach out and to have more conversations with these players in the market. What I do day in, day out on a daily basis is that I basically run the operations of Hartio, the company, as the group CEO, and of course looking at the product roadmaps. But what is more important really is that I interface with the clients a lot, right? So I help the clients look at their SE's environment and how do we help them move from human labors, manual labors and human decisions and move them, transform them into a system guided operations, whether it's the supply chain management or their logistics operations, right? And help them make better decisions from data, forecast planning and stuff like that. Yeah. So yeah, I would love to be able to connect to retailers, e-commerce players and distributors. Yeah.
Bernard, I want to thank you for your insights. Thank you for joining us on the International Business Podcast.
Thank you so much, Leo. My pleasure.
You can find the podcast on all the major platforms. Make sure to subscribe. Do not miss the weekly episodes. And are you an international professional? Connect with us on LinkedIn to come on the show. For now, cheers.